For January 14th, 2016, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Hi, everybody. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 178. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me, as always, I have Mike Herschel down the road in Gainesville. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Awesome. Mike is the happiest Florida Gators football fan right now. You know why?
No, I do not know why.
Because they're undefeated. The season's over. Anyway, today we're talking about selecting a client-side framework for Drupal. It's become a big deal in the last week or so. The discussion about this all kicked off by a Dries blog post called Selecting a Client-Side Framework for Drupal.
Yep, and so we have a number of guests with us today, but before that, I'm going to talk a little bit about background on this for people that might have been living under a rock.
We're reading you in.
So, yeah. So, decoupled, aka headless Drupal, that's when you have the server side, which would be Drupal, spitting JSON data down to a client-side framework, which would be JavaScript living somewhere, living in your browser. So that could be something like React, Ember.js, and there's probably about 10,000 more that do very similar things. And that moves pretty quick. So about a month ago, WordPress.com released Calypso, which has kind of ignited some debate too. So when I say WordPress.com, that's not regular WordPress core or any type of plugin for WordPress. This is just a hosted version of WordPress, has a decoupled back end. And that was done in the name of usability. WordPress, from what I've read, put a lot of man hours and a lot of work into this, and that increases your usability. Yeah. Since then, Dries has blogged on the topic a couple times, most recently talking about that he was considering including a JavaScript framework in core or something like that, or maybe recommending one. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. There's a whole bunch of comments to those, to his blogs. And since then, there's also been a couple issues opened up on Drupal.org that are currently being bike shedded pretty good. And there's been a lot of other blog posts out there too, including one by one of our guests today. So let's go ahead and introduce the guests. The first we have right here is the bot with the British accent, the senior developer and star architect of decoupled Drupal sites, including Lullabot.com, which is built on React and CouchDB. A longtime Lindy Hopper, and my notes here says she can cut a mad rug. What does that mean, Sally? Sally Young.
Hi. We were in DrupalCon Austin, and I took a few other bots dancing with me, and someone came up to us and said, hey, you're Drupal people, because they also had Drupal t-shirts.
Anyway, so someone came up, and apparently while I was dancing, he said, hey, she cuts a mad rug, bro.
So that's Sally Young, who is just a fish on both Drupal.org and Twitter and probably everywhere else.
Based in London, UK.
Yep.
Also along with us, we have a guy who's contributed to Spark, a Drupal distribution that's all about the improved authoring experience. He's also going to be giving a talk about decoupled Drupal at DrupalCon Mumbai coming up. Most importantly, he was the former creative director of Monarch Digital. Hi, Rick. And he's now the development manager of Acquia Labs in the Acquia's office of the CTO. So hi, Preston. Preston So.
Hey, great pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Great. And special thanks to Preston for coming on today. And that's exactly actually what Dries said at the bottom of his blog post. Special thanks to Preston for his contributions to this blog post. So Preston's got a lot to say on this topic, I'm sure.
It's awesome. So lastly, we have a former Floridian.
But not least, right?
No.
Who is now a front-end developer at Chapter 3 in San Francisco. The Chapter 3 profile page says the spirit animal is a white tiger.
Yes,
and you may if you see him in person, you may mistake him as Shaggy from Scooby Doo.
I'm a bit Shaggy Kurt Cobain esque, I'd have to say.
And he recently wrote an article on Chapter 3's blog, basically saying that including front end JavaScript framework in Drupal core is a horrible idea. This is Drew Bowles.
Yes, thank you. I'm super excited to be here. I'm super excited to to be talking this topic with a lot of very well-known and respected Drupal people. So thanks for having me.
I don't know about the respected part.
True story. So let's kick it off with Preston. Preston, just kind of take me through this, explain what your role is and kind of where this issue stands from your perspective about selecting a client-side framework for Drupal Core.
Sure, absolutely. Well, so recently we had that, you know, wonderful release of Drupal 8, which is, you know, everything we wanted it to be, and it's a really, really awesome launch. It's a very, very big step for our community. And of course, you know, as with any major release, you know, we have some time afterwards to sort of do some forward-looking and look at what the future might hold for Drupal. So as a part of the Office of the CTO here at Acquia, I was tasked with exploring some of these, you know, future-ready ways that we can address some of the gaps in user experience that Drupal currently has without actually losing what makes Drupal so great for everybody. One of the big problems with fully decoupling Drupal is that we lose a lot of what makes Drupal great. And so the question that I was really tasked with answering is, how can we enable a better user experience, a better site building experience in Drupal 8.x, those minor versions, given that, you know, we're going to see a lifespan of at least 3 to 5 years?
So that's a good answer, because it actually answers one of the second questions in our list right here, which is the problem that's being addressed with, you know, what problem are you actually addressing front-end JavaScript framework? So you're talking about better site building, better usability, going on the back end, right? Are you talking front end, or this leads into question number three right here, which is what's on the table, you know? So we've seen Drupal.org issues for including Node.js as a dependency of Drupal Core. There's talk of just anointing a framework, putting one into contrib, and obviously including one in core. What are we looking at doing? Like, what's on the table here?
So I think, you know, one thing that's very important to keep in mind is that really everything is on the table. You know, what Dries, you know, his objective was to establish sort of a baseline of debate that we can really jump off of and start talking about these issues. And, you know, I can't really speak to the issue about Node.js, mainly because that's a, you know, 9.x issue, and I'm mainly focused on this client-side framework adoption and this concept of progressive decoupling. But, you know, in terms of sort of this idea of anointing a framework or putting one in contrib, or, you know, making a dependency on Node.js, you know, for the time being, for Drupal 8.x, I think the vision is that obviously we can't break backwards compatibility. You know, just to sort of alleviate any fears, you know, Twig will not be replaced. You know, the server-side page render is not going to change anytime soon. You know, I think that obviously we've got a lot of room to debate about what actually these new core UI components would look like with this core-enabled framework. But, you know, I think that in terms of a longer-term vision, it's very, very much up for debate. What I'm really focused on is, you know, how can we accelerate these sort of user experience improvements without sacrificing things that we're so used to in Drupal, like layout and display management, content previews, things like localization, accessibility. How can we keep all of those, and especially with, you know, with the new Drupal 8 implementation of BigPipe, which is a really great performance boost, how can we actually keep all of those really great advantages that make Drupal so great as a traditional sort of soup to nuts application framework, while allowing our user experience to move ahead a little bit as well?
First of all, before we get too far, Preston, if you wouldn't mind kind of defining some terms. When you mention progressive decoupling, what do you actually mean behind that?
Sure. So, you know, I will go ahead and say that progressive decoupling is a concept that's very organic. It's not meant to be something that's, you know, set in stone. Really, Dries coined this as a term just to get the debate going. And there's two separate definitions that he's sort of presented in these blog posts. In the first post, which is the future of decoupled Drupal, he defined it as decoupling, you know, only some page components but not others, and also not the page layout as a whole, which means that, you know, only in certain regions on the page would you find this sort of decoupling occurring. However, there's another definition also in his Should We Decouple Drupal blog post, where he defines it as JavaScript that can add this sort of interactivity to page components, but the initial state of that rendered markup is generated by PHP and our Twig theme layer. But the real core of the question surrounding progressive decoupling is, you know, these are just two of potentially many ways of approaching this really broad problem of how to decouple in a way that retains all of these key built-in features that Drupal has. Things like configuration, extensibility, themeability, text sanitization, which would pretty much need to be washed away and reinvented if you're trying to go with a fully decoupled implementation. So the other side of this that I think Dries is putting forth is that progressive decoupling is about enabling a spectrum for developers. We want for traditional Drupal implementations to, you know, stay and continue to thrive, but we also want to enable progressively decoupled Drupal where some of the UX in those implementations actually improves. And of course, we also want to maintain fully decoupled Drupal, which means, you know, maintaining Drupal 8 as a first class API first CMS that serves to, you know, serves data to various front ends. We want developers to be able to build all three, and the key here really is that flexibility. And you know, one of the things I also want to stress is that this idea of progressive decoupling as a concept doesn't necessarily have an explicit dependency on a huge soup to nuts client side framework per se. It doesn't matter if it's a lightweight component library such as Vue or React, or a heavy opinionated framework like, you know, Ember or Angular, or even a unique solution by the Drupal community. But at the core of this idea is we want to improve the user experience without jettisoning or abandoning our existing architecture, and we also want to make sure that sort of one of the big ideals of Dries' vision for Drupal, this idea of an assembled web where with very minimal code you can build a site and build a very, very rich experience for visitors through, you know, various UIs that we have in place, that reality needs to be still a very high priority as well.
So is progressive coupling, decoupling, is this Big Pipe currently? I mean, is Big Pipe
You know, this actually really doesn't have anything to do with Big Pipe, because what Big Pipe is a performance implementation, is a performance boost for Drupal by using what are called progressive page flushes. And what that means is we want to sequence our rendering, you know, basically the sending of the markup to the client differently, such that the less cacheable portions of the page get sent later. What that means is that we can have a much shorter time to first paint. And this actually doesn't really have that much to do with progressive decoupling, because progressive decoupling is really about handing over some of that construction of that HTML over to client-side JavaScript. And what happens is with this handover to client-side JavaScript, any sort of further re-rendering that has to take place can then take place through the framework. And, you know, this is important to note that the extent of responsibility that comes into play with this framework is really an open question. That's sort of this progressive adjective that we've put in place.
The proposals seem to be driven a bit out of Acquia's office, and even to a comment mentioning a limited amount of sponsorship money for perhaps a non-JavaScript user experience round of improvements. So to what degree would implementing this client-side framework be like an Acquia-funded initiative or an Acquia sort of like pushed initiative with them donating money or core contributors into making this happen?
That's a really great question, and one of the things that I did actually as I went to Moshe directly and I clarified with him, he actually corrected that comment. What he meant to say is you know, we as in the Drupal community and not Acquia. He clarified with me that, you know, the overall Drupal ecosystem has limited sponsorship funds. You know, we have some leftover D8 Accelerate funds that could be devoted to this, but you know, on the whole, it's not something that you know, we have limitless resources to undertake.
To what degree is the problem being addressed because the tools that we're addressing the problem with are more attractive than actually addressing the problem? So if we can explore non-client-side framework approaches to improving some of the things that were mentioned, like user experiences and attracting new developers, are those worthy explorations in this? Arena. So like we've only been talking about sort of improving these things with a client-side framework, and the talks that haven't revolved around JavaScript have sort of been brushed aside. And like, is that because Acquia really wants the initiative of a new JavaScript JavaScript client-side framework in Drupal, or is that also just kind of harnessing some community momentum in this direction too? Because it seems from comments on these issue queues, it's the community is sort of more divided than maybe some other interests might be.
Yeah, so I think this plays into a very, you know, interesting question, which is, you know, I submitted that issue, but, you know, on the whole, I think Dries' vision for the future of Drupal is to incorporate some degree of additional JavaScript. Now, you know, obviously that sort of aspect is up for debate, but the core problem that we want to address is that, you know, fundamentally, the user experience of Drupal as it is today, you know, is considered a little behind, and this is, you know, completely based on expectations that are outside of our control. But you know, in terms of sort of other options to explore, you know, we've done considerable due diligence. We've looked at, you know, possibilities of using things like WebSockets to you know, attain this kind of functionality. And currently, the sort of, you know, one of the big arguments in favor of a JavaScript framework is that's where the momentum is. And of course, you know, we can't really guarantee that 2 years or 3 years from now, that's where the momentum will stay. But at the moment, there's a lot more momentum happening on JavaScript than really any other arena.
So the argument could be made, the argument could be made and has been made within the issue queues is, you know, let's not do this just because that's where the momentum is. You know, there has been plenty of comments in there. I think Nod and Larry Garfield have said that, you know, these user experience improvements can be made, you know, through the current AJAX framework. And, you know, I would even say personally that the user experience is not so much the fact that the page refreshes, it's the architecture of Drupal as a whole. You know, the fact that Drupal is not a, you know, turnkey system like, you know, a lot of other systems are. You have to build stuff. That makes it a little bit more difficult. So I guess the question to you is, do we need a JavaScript framework in there? You know, why can't we do this with AJAX? Why can't we do this with, you know, upcoming PHP technologies that Larry Garfield has mentioned? To me, it seems a little... It can seem a little dangerous if we're just doing this to go with the flow or to go with, you know, momentum. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure, absolutely. I want to address each of those 2 points in turn because I think they're okay. Both very, very important. So, you know, the first is, what about our existing AJAX framework, right? Well, you know, one of the big problems with AJAX as a whole and sort of the traditional way of implementing AJAX is that you're going to have some kind of latency no matter what. And the, you know, part of the goal is to, you know, and once again, it's, you know, I agree that it's not necessarily about full page refreshes. On the whole, we want to reduce latency. We want to get the user the information they want as fast as possible. And AJAX simply, you know, as it currently stands, does not give us that kind of immediacy and that instantaneousness that we want.
Doesn't WebSockets require Node on the server though?
Okay, so that's where things get a little tricky. So, you know, WebSockets is a whole different story, right? And you know, one of the arguments against PHP improvements being a big enough step is that, you know, obviously one of them is momentum, but we've already addressed that. The second is that we really don't want to force a lot of server architecture changes onto people who are, you know, now in Drupal 8. And also, you know, for future LAMP stacks that will be, you know, basically serving as the foundations for future versions of Drupal. So, you know, the main problem with a solely PHP-based solution is that it's going to require some substantial change on the server architectural side. And what, you know, what that means is, you know, let's say that we use a solution such as Ratchet, which is an asynchronous WebSocket server, and React PHP, which basically ports Node.js into PHP. Now, the problem is that, you know, a lot of our the people who use Drupal are relying on Apache, and Apache was never really designed to handle persistent connections like this, like WebSockets. It relies on a request response paradigm, which means that, you know, anytime you hold open many connections in Apache, you're basically going to deplete your resources very, very quickly. And this makes real time in terms of this idea of no latency pushes of you know, small payloads down to the client, makes this very, very difficult from a PHP standpoint. And, you know, this sort of delves a little bit into that territory of Node.js and the server-side JavaScript. But, you know, what this really means is that, you know, really honestly, the one of the fundamental questions we have to ask is whether or not PHP is the right place to do this at all. Because some of the solutions that we have are very limited. You know, we can move to a hosted service offering. You can parallelize it by by using message queues in Apache, or use a reverse proxy. But the thing is that, you know, all in all, either direction we go, whether it is in this direction of providing more real-time capabilities to PHP or going the JavaScript framework route where we have a lot of this client-side rendering take place, either route is going to take a colossal effort from the community. Yeah. And, you know, I think that it's very important for us to have this discussion about, you know, the really monumental tasks that we have ahead and determine which is the one that's the most sort of future-proof, which one's the one that's going to win out in the end. And momentum, you know, sad to say, and, you know, I wish we didn't have to sort of consider that, but it is a very important part of that question. People these days are not necessarily learning PHP as their first choice. You know, computer science classes are not necessarily teaching PHP. You know, people are less and less choosing PHP as their go-to solution. And I think the lack of the sort of comparative difference between, let's say, real-time capabilities in JavaScript and isomorphic or universal JS versus PHP is quite telling.
A point often comes up that PHP is an outdated language, and I wouldn't just. But I mean, my point was my brother's a computer science major right now, taking Java to learn object oriented. It's not like they're teaching brand new languages. Like they're not teaching Node to these kids right off the bat, you know. And I think that rewriting something that we've had over a decade of history with in JavaScript is just a knee-jerk reaction. And I know that we're not talking about rewriting everything in JavaScript, but when we get down to the nuts and bolts, a lot of it needs to be rewritten. Or even maintaining a cert client-side render and a server-side render at the same time is a massive undertaking. And then everyone agrees that it's a massive undertaking. And then I would point to the problems being solved as not massive problems. As a Drupal developer, no one's come to me and says, I need this more like Facebook in the entire like last 8 years that I've done this professionally. And so I look at these user experience problems and I look at these like admin problems and these things that are glaring issues that I've noticed as issues as well as ever in the Drupal community has, but like no one's ever asked me to improve them with JavaScript. I know they wouldn't say JavaScript, but no one's done that. And I think that a lot of this is knee-jerk reactions. A lot of this is, yeah, riding momentum. But I personally look at the JavaScript momentum as completely and utterly volatile. Like, we already did this with Backbone. I don't get this. Like, we have a JavaScript engine in Drupal core that can do this. Yeah, we have to write the data bindings ourselves and we have to write a lot more ourselves, but we selected a language that now, quote unquote, many consider obsolete. And like, that's JavaScript. God forbid we had done this with Angular 1, where between 1 and 1.3 and 1.5, you had to basically do major rewrites of your code base in order to keep up with the language, then going to 2, which was a major rewrite. So, and this goes all the way back to jQuery 1.4. For years, I had to run a patch dev version of jQuery update just so that my views worked and then I could take advantage of 1.7 stuff. So this is not even new to the Drupal ecosystem, the strife between integrating JavaScript libraries and the actual impact on front-end developers. And I didn't dislike JavaScript or jQuery in Drupal core because I didn't want to use jQuery. I just hated that I was stuck with an old version. And this issue queue is still open from 2012. How do we handle front-end libraries? So I think it's like making mountains out of molehills, solving these like well-known documented issues that have existed in Drupal authoring experience and user experience for decades with JavaScript. And that's just like, that is totally, totally like off the rails, I think, on how to go about at actually addressing the issues of the community and of the ecosystem and software itself.
I think Drew brings up the point that I come to, and I think that's based on, you know, we put jQuery in and then all of a sudden you need jQuery update, and it's kind of the speed at which JavaScript as a community is running. Like you mentioned, Angular was the hot stuff and then it was React, and now I'm told it's foobarbaz.js or something.
Yeah, the argument could also be made that jQuery was like, including jQuery with core, was like really successful.
Absolutely. So, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah. So I would
never say that as a front from a front end theming standpoint. Like maybe from a consolidation for contrib developers in core, which isn't a bad thing, but from a front, because one of the other arguments about this initiative is to attract front end developers. The last thing I want from a front end as a front end developer is an over opinionated software that makes me use an old version.
Yeah, I would somewhat agree with that. I feel like at this point talking about which JavaScript framework we want to use is missing out a huge step with this, which is we don't have the APIs available currently in core to do all these things with the admin interfaces that we want to do. So like eventually adding some kind of JavaScript framework would be nice because we could do stuff like a classic example is the admin toolbar. It's not really an isolated component. And sometimes when you're trying to build your own theme, it will get in the way with its own CSS and JavaScript inserts and stuff like that. So having those kind of things as components would be really good. there is an awful lot of work that would need to be done first to get us to the point where we could use a JavaScript framework. And who knows how long that would take and what the JavaScript landscape's going to look like at that point. But I mean, binding data to stuff with JavaScript and having it do things is not super difficult with any of the frameworks. And I don't feel like it's the conversation we should be having.
I completely agree, because we need the conversations that feel like how do we handle external libraries? How do we keep up with another community? How do we properly integrate this for themers and Contra developers? How do we, because one of the points about integrating a client-side library would be to smooth the landscape for Contra developers to build upon. Well, how do we do that effectively and not get left behind, which is also one of the fears? And so and improving APIs that can deliver this type of stuff is all worthwhile topics, I think.
Yeah, and one thing I'd love to see it be implemented is have all these APIs in place, and then as an admin theme, you could have a very opinionated admin theme, which I could use React or whatever it did. But if I wanted to build my own theme, I'm not left in the situation we are, as you mentioned, with jQuery, where it's now I'm bound to this particular version of something, and it's going to be a complete pain to get rid of everywhere.
That is definitely a point where we're in agreement. I mean, the whole reason we've kicked off this debate is to really debate these things and to figure out, what is the optimal, dependency management that we have in, core on these libraries? How can we avoid the problems of jQuery update? But the thing is that it all circles back to the jQuery problem, which is that, sooner or later we have, it makes sense to choose something. And one of the things I want to stress here is that, this vision of API provisioning where you have all of the APIs in place, very similar to, let's say, what WordPress Calypso has with all of those REST APIs already there, that's actually not mutually exclusive with this whole discussion around, improving user experience and progressive decoupling. Actually, it really serves to kill two birds with one stone, because in the process of, let's say, if we decide to, implement a particular module using a client-side framework as a contrib module, let's say, initially, that could be something that will give us insight into what problems we have with our REST server and core and how we need to improve how our APIs are actually provided. So, I think that it all fits into the whole same debate, which is, at the end of the day, we want that API-first Drupal to be, a high priority, in addition to that sort of comprehensive, holistic experience that our editors and our site builders expect out of Drupal 8.
Really, your point was awesome, having Contra be a testing ground for that. And so my big issue as a front-end developer would be having this in core. I'm just terrified, and I'm not saying that. I totally see, because I've used Drupal 8 a ton, built some sites with it. I see how library dependency management, asset management on the front-end is better. I'm still just burnt, and I'm still nervous from making these sweeping decisions for our core, where now we're stuck with something. Now we're stuck with Backbone, where in 2012, Backbone was it. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And I would love for the Contrib landscape to be the place where this is discovered, where our themes and our modules, and I know it's gross to have the thought of an Angular version of Contrib and a React version of Contrib, and you can't really mix and match those without this disgusting behemoth of a site. And that's really what we'd want to avoid too, where there's subsect of our population that wants to write Angular stuff, so all the Contrib there is Angular, and then that doesn't really integrate with the React stuff. I can totally see how that would be a nightmare. But saddling core with one of those choices, I think, would do the opposite of what we want. I think it would drive people away. I mean, just the thought of it makes me would not want to use Drupal if I was saddled with a decision like that up front for me.
It's certainly a discussion that that has strong feelings on both sides. And we'll definitely dig a little bit further into that discussion coming up right after this.
Hey, Amber.
Hello.
Drupalize Me production manager and trainer Amber Matz. Hi.
You can call me Her Majesty the Production Matz. I'm just kidding about that.
Sort of. I love it. So it's probably no surprise what we're talking about today, is it?
It's not.
No?
We have a new series up on Wednesday, as of yesterday.
And you're going to tell our podcast listeners all about it. So we're talking Drupal 8 module development.
That's right. And we have this wonderful partnership with KNP University. And Ryan Weaver has gone through some of the Symfony components that are in Drupal 8 and has walked through, as a developer, you want to get this up and running on your local. Here's how to do it. and using Composer and Git. Here's a good workflow for that. And then just dives right into setting up a module with a route and a controller and goes through all of the things that you might that you would have done with hook menu before, but now you need to do with a route and a controller. So we goes through that. And then he dives into events and services. And you know, by the end of the series, you will have a much better idea of how to make use of these special objects in PHP and in Drupal 8. So it's a pretty cool series. You should check it out.
Who are these KNP University folks?
So KNP University, they specialize in PHP and Symfony training. So they do screencasts as well. And we have a number of their video series on Drupalize Me, including Twig templating. They've done dependency injection and the art of services. A whole series on object-oriented PHP. So if you are new to object-oriented PHP, we've got three different series that will take you from the very basics all the way through interfaces and abstract classes and all of that. So if the terminology is new to you, we've got courses from them about that as well.
Neat. What else is going on?
Oh, we're working hard on our Drupal 8 theming series. Yeah. So that will be coming out the second half of February. So we are in the process of recording and editing. So look for that end of February, mid to end of February. If y'all missed the configuration management series that came out in December, be sure to check that out too. So stuff for both administrators and developers who want to use the new configuration system.
So much to do with all this new fancy pants Drupal 8 stuff.
I know, it's all so very exciting. Yeah.
Thanks Drupalize Me, friends.
Thank you, Matt. It's always a pleasure.
Welcome back. Thanks for sticking through the commercial. Was it a great commercial, Matt?
Of course it was a great commercial.
Yes. Today we're talking about front-end frameworks for Drupal, specifically default front-end frameworks that could potentially be included in core, and pros and cons and ideas around that. And we have Preston So from Acquia, Drew Bowles from Chapter 3, myself, Mike Herschel, and also Matt Cleave and Sally Lee Young from Lullabot in here.
It's a full house. It's
yeah,
a full house.
A lot of us.
I did want to talk to Preston here for a second because, you know, Preston is already Lullabot famous. Ever since May 6th, 2009, do you know what happened on that day, Preston?
Oh, I do. That was the first time I was on a Lullabot podcast. That was,
whoa!
Like,
damn.
8 years ago?
That's,
or no?
Yeah.
Six years ago?
It's been a while. Preston was on an episode of Drupal Voices where we did short little podcasts talking to people in the Drupal community walking around DrupalCon.
Cool.
And he was involved in the Drupal theming side of things back then enough that we needed to talk to him then. So Preston's an awesome guy.
And back in those days, I was still pretty young. So
weren't we all?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Preston. And I know that you probably have a couple of things to talk about. I know that we heard some concern from Sally and Drew about putting something in core and making that decision something that everybody has to deal with. And that might be a challenge.
Sure, sure. You know, I think there's a very large contingent of people who definitely see the, you know, merit of putting this in contrib first and then letting it play out there. And I think there's sort of two major problems with that approach. You know, these are things that could be mitigated through other means. But one of the main problems with actually allowing this debate to play out in contrib is that we get to this possibility of having multiple frameworks loaded on a page. Let's say that, you know, Commerce chooses to implement their stuff in Ember, and you know, let's say that another module decides to use React instead. That leads to a whole host of problems when it comes to, you know, the potential for a single page to have multiple frameworks. And the other side of it is that, you know, as a result of that lack of consensus around, you know, what framework will win out in contrib, there's going to be a lot of churn, and it's going to be very difficult to actually reach a result that everyone's going to be happy with and that everyone agrees is the right path forward, especially given the volatility in the JavaScript world. And one of the biggest concerns I think that Dries shares is, you know, that potentially this could, you know, sort of leave Drupal behind in the sense of, you know, if we don't jump on some kind of a framework soon, we're going to lead, you know, this is going to lead to a whole bunch of performance problems with multiple frameworks on a page, and will lead to, you know, sort of a substantial amount of sort of churn in the contrib, you know, in the contrib space as far as what framework actually wins out.
So why can't we just kind of anoint a framework and say, hey, listen, you know, the community says we want to use Ember. If you guys are going to do contrib, do Ember, and of course you don't have to, but that's what everybody else is going to do. And at that point, we can at least see how it plays out. You know, some of those same arguments where you said, like, this is moving so fast, you know, that could also be used to argue against putting it directly in core.
That's certainly a good point. And, you know, I think this is, you know, in terms of how the initial sort of, you know, way this will happen looks, you know, my vision is that, you know, let's take, for example, the comment module or the views UI, right? You know, we can take the views UI and create, let's say, an Angular views UI and contrib, an Ember views UI and contrib. But the, you know, ultimately what we want is for some kind of, we don't want to waste time, right? We don't want to implement all of these contributed modules in a framework that's ultimately not going to win out and not going to be something that we want other modules to work with as well. So that's really the big concern that I have. Ultimately, if we anoint a framework, however that happens, and we say, all right, this is the framework, let's build a version of Vue's UI in Ember and put that in contrib, and, you know, sort of assess, you know, based on that, that only solves half the problem, right? We really want to say with an opinionated fashion that this is the framework that we think is currently best. And, you know, obviously there's many different ways that we could go about this. And I think, you know, Dries in that should we decouple Drupal blog post really outlined the possible options really well, which is, you know, it could be that we only recommend a framework or say, hey, here's a default framework that you can replace with your own. And so there's a whole array of different possibilities that we have. But ultimately what I think we don't want is this sort of volatility of the JavaScript world to be reflected, to be mirrored in our contrib space as well.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But at the same time, you know, if Ember, for whatever reason, is not the coolest thing like it was, like back when it was in 2012, at that point, you know, you're going to have the same front-end developers that you're trying to attract looking at Drupal and saying, hey, listen, you know, they're using a framework that's, you know, 3 years old, which of course is like 100 years in internet years, you know.
Yeah, you're right, Mike. The backbone example is just a fantastic example of almost the exact scenario we're in, where we just needed to pick something. We wanted to pick something with momentum. And I mean, does that what does that leave backbone now? Are we talking about ripping that out and replacing it, layering another one on top? Like, at what where does replacing our core choices come into to this discussion? So, like, as we do select something and have to replace our old stuff, the impacts of that could be just as catastrophic as trying to, like, write something our own, basically, like maintaining our own JavaScript library.
Yeah, and I also want to clarify, like, I can see the benefit of putting it into core, because at that point you have the decision made. You know, you have that decision where everybody can focus all their efforts into one framework. They can make this into the awesome Drupal framework. They can get this work in. People can develop best practices. There's a whole bunch of really good reasons to make that, but at the same time, you know, it goes back to like the whole cathedral and bazaar type thing, where you have a top-down approach versus the bazaar approach, where everybody does everything, and it's almost like a natural selection. And open source, at the same time, like has thrived in the, you know, in the almost helter-skelter natural selection area, and I don't know if there's the right answer.
That's kind of why the JavaScript world is as crazy as it is. I mean, there's just so many options, and for me, it's kind of fun. Like I can be really flexible in what I build. I mean, on NPM, there's like what 200,000 packages that I can choose from. Like, yeah, it can burn you out sometimes just trying to keep up with everything, but I think it allows me to choose the tool that's better for the particular thing that I'm building. And in some respects, again, like on the admin side of things, I don't particularly care what you use. But for me, what I am building a lot is front-end themes, and that really concerns me is what you're going to dictate that I have to do there.
So, Sally, like, are you saying that, you know, part of the reason that you really like JavaScript and that you like all these frameworks is because it changes so often?
It's not that it changes so often. It's just really flexible.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad thing, because that means you're working with, like, the new and sexy frameworks at all times, as opposed to, like, you know, the same old thing. But, like, at the same time, like, let's call it out, like, if that is the case, let's call it, you know?
Right, but it's not about, like, working with it because it's new and shiny.
Okay.
It just has a lot more specialist things available that you can click together. So, like, the difference between React and Angular is a good example, because Angular has a lot of stuff built in, like it has all the routing and everything like that. So if you choose to use Angular, which, say, is more of a framework, then, you know, a lot of those decisions are made for you. That's kind of good in some respects. But so I use React these days because it's new and cool. But no, there's actually other good reasons. But that's more of a library, and I can click in the things that I want to use. So if I want routing, then maybe I'll go use React Router or something else. And there's tons of different ways to architect it. I can slot it in what makes sense for the thing that I'm building at the time.
Yeah, React components operate a lot more like Drupal Contrib in that sense. And I think JavaScript can do so many stuff so many different ways that we're not going to see necessarily new and shiny. We're going to just see different ways of solving different problems too. Like, it's just tools are just going to be better for certain problems than the other. And with Drupal solving a massive amount of problems out of the box and, like, by design, picking a framework would then pigeonhole the problems we're actually able to solve appropriately even.
Yeah, I don't want Drupal to do that. I want Drupal to be good at what it is, and that's a CMS, not my front end framework choice. Yeah,
but what about through the back end?
Oh, well, and then as I said, I don't, you know, if you want to make the back end Ajax-y and cool with a framework, that's totally fine, but keep it isolated to the admin theme and build some APIs that would allow me to build another admin theme in a different framework if I really wanted to.
Right. So, you know, I think the central tension here is that, you know, people, you know, come to Drupal and they approach it and they see it as being sort of like this obsolete thing, and you know, so the big question is, we can't really wait when it comes to improving our admin UX. At the same time, we can't limit the ability for people to choose their own framework and operate in that way. And so I think that's the reason why, you know, we should prioritize you know, this sort of idea of an API-first Drupal that serves these fully decoupled front ends just as highly and prestige that just as highly as we would, you know, sort of a better admin user experience. And, you know, I definitely see the concern that some of this stuff will leach into this sort of public-facing or end-user-facing theme, and that is definitely a valid concern. But, you know, once again, because of how, you know, how we have asset libraries now and sort of selective loading, of JavaScript, we've really sort of, you know, sort of solved a lot of those problems. And I think that, you know, if you do ultimately want to use a front-end framework for your end-user-facing theme, sure. But if you also want to just use Twig, I think that's an option that should stay perfectly valid as well all throughout the entire life cycle or lifespan of Drupal 8.
It feels like a bit of a contradiction to the argument you used, though, that the reason you would want to anoint a framework is to make sure, say, Drupal Commerce users doesn't use one thing, whereas, you know, Vue's UI uses another. You know, they might load in different frameworks. But what you're saying is like, oh, well, we're not going to do that and interfere, but, like, inevitably, Contrib is going to start using the things that are there.
And especially if Simple Contrib decides to leverage a client-side framework and the rendering engine is not decoupled, like, I'm going to be forced to load that entire framework in order to accomplish what that Contrib module wanted to accomplish. And, like, God forbid it's just Drupal comments. Like, if I have to load the entire Angular framework in order to have a instant preview and an auto-refresh Drupal comments, that seems excessive.
Yeah, that's another thing is just, you know, page load time, and, like, you know, you also get into some accessibility issues where are we going to do, you know, the server-side rendering and stuff like that, and if so, at that point, do we have Node on the server and all that?
So once again, I mean, that's really not, you know, discussion that I want to get into on this particular podcast, just because it's very out of scope and it's you know as far as you know this question of actually getting to the point where we have some end user facing UIs and some you know sort of solely admin UIs, that's a really, really hard question. And obviously, we need to have a very, very involved discussion about what that actually looks like. And again, the concern about accessibility is a very valid one. Obviously, we've done a lot of great work with Drupal 8 to actually make it a much more powerful, accessible platform. But, once again, one of the biggest, things that Drupal has always been proud of is progressive enhancement and always having fallback. And this is part of the reason why, this progressive decoupling approach, or this idea of let's get some server-side rendering through Drupal first and then supply some client-side rendering through a framework, it means that we have a static fallback already in place, right? We don't have to reinvent the wheel and create a server-side render of this, of a framework using Node.js. Now, of course, there's still a lot of friction between those, between the server-side render provided by Drupal and the client-side render provided by Angular or Ember. But I think that, ultimately we can solve those problems. Ultimately, those are not intractable issues.
Drew, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
There's something that I'm kind of seeing as a theme in this last section of our discussion. When I saw you in Orlando for the Drupal Camp Florida, and then again in Denver, you were talking about your tool chain, right?
Yes.
So it seems like front-end developers are definitely opinionated about their tools.
Oh my God! I've encountered more opinionated front-end developers over tools than I have like politicians being opinionated about something.
Yeah, and so that kind of discussion will happen without outside of the Drupal community, like within your office or whatever. So throwing this kind of thing into Drupal is going to create a huge discussion and definitely huge opinions on all sides.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't avoid this, right?
Sure.
So you're especially in JavaScript. And I think when people's egos are tied into it, not that Drupal's, not our Drupal egos aren't tied into this, but with JavaScript egos being tied into it, and people, like, I would say, not directly, but Facebook creates React to compete with Angular. We're talking about, like, competitive languages that are driven to, like, attract certain types of developers and things. It's going to be heavily opinionated, and that would be a major issue, major blocker in, like, getting a consensus for us to get it into core, I would even see.
Yeah. So what color do you want to paint the bike shed, Preston?
What about Drupal blue?
Okay,
right?
That works.
But I mean,
that's kind of everybody's goal, right? We all make our living on Drupal. We love Drupal, and we want what's going to be best for the community, right?
And I want, don't get me wrong, like I feel like I rail against including this type of stuff, and I don't want to come across as like anti-JavaScript. I like all the new stuff coming out, and I'm with Sally. Like I like playing with the new stuff, one, because it's new and shiny, and I think they do make some good stuff. But as it's, like you said, like as someone who makes their living in Drupal, I've been burnt and I've seen this type of integration before. And so that's where my friction and hesitation comes from in sort of like adopting, not the overarching issues and goals and problems. Like I agree with, Preston, I agree with everything, right? Like I agree with the momentum's there and I agree that we don't want to be stagnant and I agree that selecting will unify. And then I totally agree that everything's a hard issue. It's like just my brain will look at integrating something into core with like a negative impact just because of how I've interacted with Drupal for so long.
So I have a question for you, Drew. You wrote your article basically saying that this is a bad idea, but within your article you state Drupal has never been nor should be a choice for lean startups to build their exit strategies upon. So what the hell, Drew?
It sounds like tweet bait.
It's kind of like off the cuff statement. And I mean, if I'm going to put a little bit more emphasis on lean startup and lean being a key word in that phrase, they're lean, they're fast moving, and they often pivot easily. And like as a Drupal architect, the things that I build don't pivot easily. It's like once I have a functional spec in front of me and I build that in Drupal, that is not the easiest thing to pivot. And it's oftentimes not very lean. It's involved. It involves a lot of custom code and a lot of contributed modules, pieces and parts that aren't easily just replaced or yanked out or whatever. And so maybe it's just my experience with how I've been asked to build Drupal sites, my clientele, but the type of languages that build that are used to build these lean startups. Like, for instance, Trello is a great one. It's just like a single page application. It's fast. That they can replace parts easily. I don't see that as a use case a lot of times for what Drupal does.
Yeah, I can see the whole single page application thing not like being maybe not. You know, it could be a use case, but it would definitely be an edge use case. You know, but at the same time, I don't agree that, you know, Drupal doesn't like pivot very easily. I think honestly it can, with the fact that there's like, you know, however many tens of thousands of contributed modules out that you can kind of build, you can fit into your Lego castle and put stuff on, and you can reconfigure your views pretty easily, and that's going to even be easier now with Drupal 8, you know, and content management and stuff. But anyway, I just wanted to call you out on that, because I honestly didn't agree with that. I was like, I'm going to have to say something.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad, obviously, totally. I really do. I don't think that, you know, from a feature complete standpoint, mm-hmm. we pivot very easy. Like, if I'm going to create a feature in Drupal and then throw that away, that's really detrimental to the project, because on average, custom programming features in Drupal takes a bit of time. And, like, totally, if you're leveraging Contra, that's different. But often the problems being solved by startups aren't just, like, out-of-the-box problems that Drupal would provide for you. And so, like, creating a feature set in Drupal and then having to throw that away or rewrite it completely from the ground up would be definitely, I think, an undertaking, more so than it would be in a language designed to do that, like, JavaScript, like the JavaScript framework, modern, like a React would, where like I can just rip out this component, replace it with a different component, and move on.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, to actually talk about that issue a little bit, I mean, you know, the whole idea of, you know, a lean startup, you know, moving rapidly, of course, that makes a lot of sense. And honestly, fully decoupled Drupal is a great candidate for that. This API first, framework agnostic, you know, and solely endpoint based idea of Drupal is definitely a great candidate for lean startups. However, as Drew mentioned, you know, it's like you're basically washing away a lot of the features that, you know, we in Drupal and a lot of the clients that we work with have taken for granted for a very long time. And it's very tough to really sort of bridge that gap and say, how do we actually, you know, fulfill all those needs as well?
Yeah, Drupal out of the box just gives you so much that you don't even realize. I think, Sally, you spent a good amount of time implementing, you know, the preview functionality, a decoupled preview functionality on lullabot.com that Drupal would, you know, just of course give you, but we had to spend a lot of time and effort on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it just gives it to you, though. There's a lot of other stuff to think about, like especially because we look at things on so many devices these days, just hitting a preview button doesn't necessarily give you exactly what you're going to look at. And, you know, a node you're looking at might be used in, like, a ton of other places.
True.
I don't know. I've just not, like, worked on a project where the preview has been, like, 100% as it should be.
I agree with that. But it definitely helps out.
I just it's just not always perfect.
Cool.
So like all I'm saying is like it's great, but it doesn't come with no problems whatsoever.
So I mean, and really, I think a lot of concerns from the community are a little bit of our own knee-jerk reaction to this proposal, because, I mean, really what you're hearing and what's being proposed is, like, let's have a discussion. Let us just analyze and observe what's moving in this front-end realm and how that relates to Drupal. And I think that maybe the issues come across reading a bit more heavy-handed and not so much, like, let's have a discussion, more like, let's do this and we're doing this and, like, let's go. But, like, I really think that the discussion around it is super beneficial. If not for all the things that Preston mentioned, that will get better, like our API, the robustness of our APIs provided from core, and the integration of the more decoupled, purely decoupled headless sites will kind of push this along as well. And I think all that conversation is incredibly beneficial.
Yeah, and that brings up a point. So is Acquia dead set? And when I say Acquia, I mean basically Dries. Is Dries saying this is going to happen and we can choose a framework, or is he saying should this happen?
the personal opinion that Dries has on this matter is really wrapped up in those blog posts, and I highly encourage everyone to stay abreast of those discussions there because this is an evolving debate. Fundamentally, Dries' goal is to improve the administrative user experience within Drupal. And based on the research that we've done and the due diligence that we've done and the conclusions that we've drawn from those ideas, the best way to do that smartly and efficiently looks like through a client-side framework. Now, a lot of people have mentioned, you know, like as I mentioned earlier, you know, we could do a lightweight JavaScript library that we write within the Drupal community, but it will be quite tough to actually match the robustness of the frameworks and libraries already in the wild with these really large engaged communities. And writing JavaScript of our own would also mean, you know, completely reinventing the wheel. Until now, you know, we have our own Ajax framework and our own Drupal-specific JavaScript API, but a lot of front-end developers are choosing not to learn it. They're just, you know, sprinkling on top their own bespoke JavaScript that has nothing to do with our Drupal JavaScript. So, you know, fundamentally, yes, I think putting a wheel that's been invented already on the Drupal mobile that's proudly found elsewhere means we might need a new axle or a few new parts to support it. Speaking completely figuratively here, of course. But it is definitely Dries' view that incorporating an existing framework or library would get us where we need to be with the least amount of work.
So the way I'm understanding that is, yes, it's pretty much going to happen. Is that correct? Am I understanding that right? Like, I mean, if it is... Is it possible for him to decide at a later date? And I mean, anything's possible, but is it likely to say, hey, like, hey, no, we're going to do our own thing or do an Ajax framework or something like that?
Well, obviously, we need to really take a very hard look at the frameworks. And I think it's a little too early to answer that question because, okay. You know, what's very important is to get some proof of concepts using these really opinionated frameworks, using, you know, Ember and React, seeing how they fit in. And, you know, it could be that at the end of the day that we need to go a different route. But for right now, I think we need to try it out and see where things go.
Makes sense.
Let's just ask this question then. Is Backbone obsolete? Is that the community feeling around the Backbone integration in core right now?
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that Backbone, we incorporated Backbone, obviously. If you take a look at that old issue, we incorporated Backbone because we knew it was going to enhance a lot of the sort of UI components we have in place. You know, toolbar, tour, quick edit, and the CK editor, you know, button and group configuration all actually, you know, use Backbone and leverage it. You know, however, we didn't get that sort of influx of front-end developers that we wanted. We didn't get that huge amount of sort of front-end, you know, growth that we really wanted to see. We really want to do that well this time. We really want to land on that sort of right solution, the right approach this time. And, you know, I think that really what's important here is that the debate is open and transparent. We want to make sure to get this decision right. We don't necessarily want to, to do what WordPress Calypso did, where, you know, sort of some of those, some of the people working on that, you know, WP API got some of their stuff deprecated. You know, that's the situation we want to avoid, ultimately. And, you know, now that we're talking about WordPress Calypso, just to sort of, you know, clear the air, you know, it's true that the urgency of this and the sort of, you know, as Drew or as Mike put it, the knee-jerk reaction that we have to, you know, the JavaScript world and how things are moving, it certainly did become more urgent after Calypso was announced. But, you know, honestly, we've already been investigating this sort of solution for, you know, months now at this point, even before that announcement was coming into play. So
I have a question about implementation more than anything, and it may be a crazy question because I haven't taken the time to explore a lot of these JavaScript frameworks and be smart that way. But I know the way that Drupal's backend is and Drupal Form API, and oftentimes integrating other things with Form API presents challenges. This isn't going to be an easy thing to do, is it?
Not at all. Not at all. And I think, you know, you raise a very good point because it is very complicated. And, you know, another thing that is important to remember also is that the strategies that these different rendering engines use is completely different, right? In Drupal, we have render arrays and we basically, you know, traverse these arrays and then put them together. You know, and basically we have our hook system, which allows you to basically alter what goes into those arrays. Whereas client-side rendering in the JavaScript sense is really predicated on sort of this idea that you compile this HTML-like or template markup down to JavaScript as basically self-contained objects. And, you know, that presents a whole lot of sort of problems when it comes to, you know, how do you actually reach that parity? And that's really where we are looking for a lot of help, I think, as the Drupal community is, you know, how can we better leverage, you know, things like client-side rendering without necessarily going so far as to fully decouple Drupal?
So what's the timetable on all of this? Like, are we talking like a Drupal minor release, or are we talking Drupal 9, Drupal 10, or like what's on the table as far as getting this actually done, assuming it happens?
Well, you know, once again, because, you know, we want to stick with no backwards compatibility breaking changes, mm-hmm. you know, Twig is not going to, you know, Twig is going to, you know, of course stay, Backbone is going to, of course, stay. I think that the, you know, any sort of, you know, entertainment of the question of sort of deprecating Twig or Backbone cannot really take place until version 9. However, in terms of actually interpolating some of this rich interactivity, this can certainly happen now. You know, and of course, because of selective asset loading, we can, you know, choose pages that won't load Backbone and will load, you know, certain things of, you know, of that nature will be able to happen. And, you know, it will ultimately be the case that, you know, that we will land on the right solution, I think.
Sally, where can we find you on Twitter? And do you have any final thoughts on this?
You can find me on Twitter as JustaFish. I don't have any particular final thoughts.
Okay. Fantastic.
Just go rewind. Hey, and then I'll say all the stuff over again.
Can you say router again? Because I was kind of getting a kick out of it. Yeah.
How about Preston? Preston, thanks for joining us. Do you have any final thoughts, and where can somebody find you on Twitter?
Thanks so much for having me. You can definitely get in touch with me on Twitter. It's just my name, Preston So. Very easy to remember, very easy to get. And, you know, with this whole debate, you know, I do want to sort of stress that none of this is particularly settled. None of this is you know, we want, you know, part of what our goal is to get this this provocativeness going so that people notice what we're talking about and really chime in with their opinions. You know, I'm very excited for the future of Drupal. I continue to be very excited for the future of Drupal, you know, regardless of the direction that it takes. And, you know, I'm very, very happy to sort of be in this position where we can really witness some of this really exciting front end change and evolution happen to Drupal itself.
So where can somebody get involved if they have an opinion greater than your framework sucks?
Hey. Yeah, so the best way to get involved is, you know, we've got those two issues going up that are in the core issue queue right now. We definitely want anyone who has opinions about this to put in their input, and also, you know, to comment on Dries' blog post about this client-side framework selection and determine, you know, that will help us determine sort of the direction moving forward for as a community together.
Drew, do you have any final thoughts, and where can somebody find you on Twitter?
Great, thanks. Yeah, so at Bolskis on Twitter. And then, yeah, my final
thoughts. Wait, slow that down. At what?
Oh, at, sorry, at Bolskis, Bollskis.
Of course, okay.
Yeah, of course, right? Yeah, it's just super evident from the way that I mumbled it out. But no, my thoughts are similar. I love the conversation. I love the ability that Drupal is even able to have these types of conversations that were so successful in a rich ecosystem of really talented and opinionated developers, that the conversations coming out of it are so much less combative than you would think with such a controversial topic and really are pushing the Drupal community forward. So while I stand against it, I really, really love the fact that we can have these types of conversations.
And we'll still run into each other at DrupalCon and hug each other and stuff, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Except for you, Matt.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Preston and Sally and Drew, for joining us. It's a tough topic to try and cram into a podcast and get everybody's opinion out, and I'm sure it's going to be hashed out in issue queues for a while now to come.
Yep. Let's talk about some upcoming events. Coming up on January 16th is Drupal Day in Kolkata, India.
Woohoo.
Yep, January 21st, GLAD Camp, Greater Los Angeles Drupal Camp.
I still
in
like
Pasadena.
Their name.
Yeah, no, it's pretty nice. Greece, and geez, I don't know where the heck that is. It's like an A and then an O with a line and an N with a tilde. It's stylized V and an A.
Looks like Greek to me.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Drupal Camp, New Jersey, where Preston will be presenting on Decoupled Drupal, January 30th. DrupalGov Canberra in Australia for those that are upside down in the world.
That's right. Followed by DrupalCon Mumbai 2016, February 18th. DrupalCon on the other side of the world.
Yep, and Preston will also be there. February 25th, Sand Camp. That's San Diego Drupal Camp. February 27th is Drupal Camp NYC in New York City. March 3rd is in Iran. That's Drupal Camp in Iran. That's Isfahan, Iran. March 4th, Drupal Camp Utah in Salt Lake City. Also on March 4th is Drupal Camp Vietnam in Hanoi. March 5th, we have two great Drupal camps, one which is the best and the other one which is slightly not as good. The first one is Drupal Camp London 2016.
Which one is that?
That's the one that's not quite as good as Florida Drupal Camp, which is March 5th in Orlando. So Florida Drupal Camp, I'm trying to talk that one up just because I'm an organizer. I'm going to be there speaking, as will Matt Cleave, hopefully.
He needs to figure out what he's going to talk about, but yeah, I'd like to make it down.
So head out to your local meetups and Drupal camps.
For sure. Hey, we've been really good doing this podcast thing every other week, huh?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Honestly, this one has been a little bit more work, but definitely a lot of fun.
You know, I really do want to appreciate Drew and Sally and Preston for being patient with us. As awesome as we made this sound, boy, the internet wasn't liking us today. We got disconnected several times.
Yeah, we pretty much tracked this down to Drew's internet somehow. We're kind of blaming him, even though he has nothing to do with it.
It's because he's on the other side of the country, although Sally is across the pond. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think we should blame Drew.